Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're in the world. Welcome one and all, you're listening to the Nick Rowe podcast. And today I'm extremely pleased and honoured to welcome onto my show Hannah McQueen. Hannah is a chartered accountant with Masters in Taxation Law. She's founder of Enable Me Financial Personal Trainers, a hugely successful and growing business with offices throughout New Zealand. She has a business that I know works, and we'll come on to that a bit later. Hannah is one of New Zealand's leading experts, or as I like to call, a very important person for my listeners to seek out. She's a go-to person for many TV and radio shows, newspapers and magazines, and has written a number of blogs and books such as The Perfect Balance, How to Get Ahead Financially and Still Have a Life, which I think became a bestseller.
It does.
Congratulations. Kill Your Mortgage and Sort Your Retirement Now, with her latest book, Pocket Money to Property, How to Create Financial Independent Kids, both, which came out in 2017. I really love your content and your ambition around helping Kiwis find financial freedom. And who wouldn't want that? I'm also loving your view that most people don't know what they're capable of achieving, so they don't set goals, and therefore they don't make progress. Well, if that's you, you're comfortably inefficient, and it may well be time for us all to get a little bit uncomfortable today. So today, Hannah and I are going to dive into, headfirst, the topic, taming money. I've heard a lot of people, as a young guy growing up in the UK, Nick, you never discuss politics or money at the dinner table. Today, we're not talking politics, thank God. We're going to spend some time on talking money, and more importantly, taming money. Rest assured, Hannah and I are not sitting around the dinner table. We're in her beautiful office up here in Parnell, Auckland. So hopefully I can keep everyone out of trouble. A big welcome to each and every one of you who have made the genuine decision to put the spotlight on yourself and the quest of improving. Thanks for tuning in. It means a great deal to me. My name is Nick Rowe, and I'm thrilled to be your host today. To those brand new to the show, a little bit about me. I'm a career coach based in New Zealand and work specifically with individuals, groups and organisations that want to improve. I've been helping people since 2006 and continue to find lasting results with my clients. My purpose for these podcasts is simple: to uncover thoughts, discover the why, and ultimately dig much deeper than anyone else has ever done in the pursuit of helping us all to improve. Our podcast will always be conversations, not interviews. Conversations with some of the most interesting people around, and our guest Hannah is no exception to the rule. I understand from a number of my coaching clients that this topic, taming money, is extremely important, and is right on the top of their checklist when they come and work with myself. So thank you, Hannah, for joining me today.
Thank you.
So let's get into it. Welcome onto the show, and thank you for putting some time aside to meet with me and to go all in on this topic, which I know is really important to many people at any stage of life. I know my listeners around the world, of which we've got 17,000 people listening in the United States, Canada, Europe, the UK, South Africa, Russia, and now Hungary, not to mention our cousins over in Australia and here in New Zealand. They're going to get so much from our conversation, I hope. So you and your business Enable Me Financial Personal Trainers is well respected and regarded. And from a personal point of view, Nicola, my wife and I, we sat down with Suzanne probably around four and a bit years ago. We went through a plan with her to get rid of our mortgage. And I can say hand on heart, it worked. It got us ahead. It got us to where we are today. So I'll forever be grateful to Suzanne and yourselves for finding that crazy formula, finding that scientific formula and putting it out there and helping people. So maybe as a starting point, those that may not know who you are, and I'll be surprised, but let's say that, may not know. Could you tell me a little bit more about yourself and a bit more about you?
Yes, well, I, as you mentioned, I'm a chartered accountant and I have my Masters in Taxation Law, and this is what I tend to say, and I have a personality.
I came out of practice, so please don't go there.
I'm financially literate, I guess is another way of putting it, but I'm also a shopper, so for me, you could tell me to spend less, but I'm not inclined to because my tendency is to spend the money that I have. And when I got my first mortgage, it was for $350,000, and I was going to pay the bank close to three times that amount, which was almost $1 million over 30 years. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to pay them less? But I didn't really know how to do that without increasing my payments to the bank to shorten my term, which is the traditional way that you pay off your mortgage. But in doing that, I guess I didn't want to commit to these higher repayments each month because there were certain months where I certainly couldn't afford to pay more. And actually, as it was standing, I didn't even have any spare money to pay the mortgage off faster.
Just the mortgage.
Just the mortgage.
Yeah.
So this is before I had kids, clearly. I called the calculus department of the University of Auckland and asked if they would help me work on this formula to structure my debt so I'm paying my mortgage off as quickly as possible, thereby saving the most amount of interest possible, but with maximum flexibility. So that's kind of an algorithm. And over a period of a few months, we worked on what that algorithm looked like, irrespective of the size of your mortgage or your particular situation. And we were able to create a formula that would save a typical person the size of their mortgage and interest costs. So for me, it was $350,000, which was fairly compelling, right? And
it's a lot of money now, a lot of money then.
That's right. Yeah. And so I patented that formula. And I'm like, yeah, this is great.
That's what I wanted to ask. When you walk into the university and you speak to these people and you've got this thing going on in your head,
yes,
how confident are you that they're not going to nick it off you? You know, you've got this baby. We'll come on to Enable Me and the starting point, but was you sitting there going, how do I trust these guys? Because I think we need to patent this.
Yes, well, I think to start with, I might have got them to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Yep.
But the thing with the universities is that the universities get their credit from published work, and a patented software referencing them as one of the founders that came up with that, that is actually really good for their own career progression.
And everything for them by doing it the right way.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was kind of a win-win with that. So anyway, I had this amazing formula, but for the formula to work, I needed to have money left over that I could put towards paying the mortgage off faster, which makes sense, except I had no money left over. And people say, well, if you spend less than you earn, you'll be fine. It's like, well, I get the logic. I'm an accountant. Yep. I could write a budget. I could color code a budget. I'm just not going to stick to it. And it's not because I'm stupid. It's just not my tendency. Yep. And I refused to believe that because I'm a shopper, therefore I won't make financial progress. But I needed to understand that my own relationship with money to then work out how can I influence my own behavior. And that was around 10 years ago, and that was when Enable Me, I guess, took its shape.
Got it.
Where, I guess, we coined the phrase financial personal trainers or financial coaches, where our job is to help people do things they know they're supposed to do, and in theory they should be able to do themselves, but in many instances they don't, or they can't, for various reasons. Or you just want to use more smart so that you can get ahead faster, because why take 10 years to be debt-free when you can do it in 5?
Why be tied to the bank? Or
absolutely,
whoever that may be,
absolutely,
family, whatever. So, growing up, as a kid, growing up, I mentioned, you know, we never talked about politics or money around the dinner table or wherever that may be, and I don't know how true that is. But when you grew up as a kid, were you somebody who talked openly with family and friends around money growing up, or was that just a big no-no?
I talked with my mum a lot about it. My mum used to manage kind of the household finances. Yep. My dad kind of was a bit of a dreamer when it came to his finances, and I guess the benefit is that he could live very small. He was naturally quite frugal, so he didn't live large, which kind of offset the fact that he didn't have much of a strategy. But my mum, she managed the budget, and she managed things really well, and we never went without. And I guess I'm aware now that there were times she went without so that we wouldn't.
Sacrifice.
I think I've always been interested with money. I've always wanted to be successful. I think my mum told me very early on, when I was trying to work out what I should do, she's like, well, she said, you've got expensive tastes, Hannah, so you need to make sure you earn good money. And I thought that's probably really good insight.
Yeah. I remember when I went into a CA firm in London, and I remember speaking to a partner. He said, oh, look, you know, academically, Nick, you're dyslexic. Why am I going to even hire you? And I said, oh, look, I'm really keen to understand how you make money, how you use money, and how you lose money. I was just fascinated by that whole world of how people in business or life can do so well, have so little. So anyway, that was my kind of get into finance and understand. I went through tax as well, so I feel painful as we say it. But back to you, were you given pocket money as a, you know, I want to come full circle onto the kids thing today. But as you growing up, were you given like a budget? Were you given cash to thank you for doing the chores around the house? Or were you exposed to money?
I earned money.
Yep,
and I've always enjoyed earning money.
Yep.
I don't really care about money, but I love the process of being able to influence how much I can take from the equation.
Yep.
So I was never given money from my parents, but every holidays I would work, and yeah, what did I think I had a like a paper run. I think I used to drop off real estate brochures for the local real estate agent, and I liked that because I had a kind of a set amount of brochures to deliver, and you could do it as quickly as you wanted.
Or so
you
could,
and I'm all about, let's push through, let's get it, do this as quickly as possible. And I loved being able to influence the return of my time from a very young age.
And how old-ish?
I would have been about 12.
Okay, so that's young.
Yeah.
And I think, we're seeing kids, we're on the shore in Birkenhead, and I see people, young kids with their parents dragging their kids around because they know they're trying to steal on them, but it's so important to start them young.
Yes, I think too often with our kids, we, especially nowadays, we teach them, to have three jars or something that, like one for giving, one for saving, one for spending. And I think we've missed the biggest jar, which is you need one for earning, and we need to encourage our kids to earn money, not just to allocate the money that they're given. And I think too often the kids coming through, they don't have a connection with what income levels are going to be for professions they want or passions they want to pursue. And there's kind of a missing a trick there, I think.
So let's not fast forward, because I don't like skipping the important thing, but enable me. How did that come about for you? How was that moment? Was that a moment sitting there in tax, as we all did, and going, oh my Lord, there must be more to life? Or what spurred you to set up your baby?
Well, I'd love it to be a great story. Maybe it is a good story. Well, I guess my traditional background was accounting and business advice and wealth creation and minimizing tax. I loved all those things. But one of the components I didn't understand particularly well was the how you leverage. Like, I got the idea of leverage, how you get a mortgage and you secure it against your property. I just didn't know the intricacies of how you actually did that. So I went and worked for a mortgage brokering firm for about a year to try and, I guess, immerse myself in the science of it. And that was really interesting. And as part of that, a friend or a colleague and I, we thought, we're helping all these people get into debt. Why don't we actually help them get out of debt?
Neat.
And I thought, that's a cool idea. And so we went and spoke to the CEO of that organisation.
At the mortgage firm.
Mortgage firm. We said, this is our idea.
There's the door.
And he said, no, write me up a business plan.
Because
we said, let's do it with you. And then we did do that. And then the next day he said, there's the door.
Thank you. I've got your collateral down.
Do
you still speak to that person?
No, I've never spoken to him since.
You should send a letter and say thank you. Anyway.
Yeah.
Got to get lawyers involved.
Yeah, lawyers might be quite close behind.
They're expensive.
And so then my friend and I were like, and because I'm an accountant, right? I'm the goody good of all, my friends. And this was not what I was expecting.
Was you devastated? Honestly, did you feel like you'd been ripped apart?
Yeah. I walked out, I didn't cry when I walked out, but I was carrying a box, so it was very cliche.
Old school, literally, get your box.
And I called my husband, and I said, you need to come and pick me up, and he came on his motorbike, and I just burst into tears then. I'm like, how am I supposed to carry the box home on the motorbike? Yeah, it's the funny things that break you, right?
But make you. Sorry, I shouldn't jump in.
Straight away, right? Yeah, you're grieving
clouds.
For a while, and...
Did you just peel that back 2 seconds? Because on a coaching capacity, I work with a lot of individuals in the corporate world or wherever they sit. I don't want to get into too much detail because of confidentiality. But they're looking to exit or do whatever they want to do. Mm-hmm. So you've gone to your CE with your friend and you put an idea together thinking there's a lot of trust there. And suddenly it's thank you, there's a door. Had you considered the what if scenario if he said, look, there's a door, bugger off? Or did that not even come into Hannah's, your world?
No.
Right,
because of that. I thought it was a great idea. I was being honest with him. I wanted to do it with him. I thought it was a great value add for the business, where the future was going. Yeah. I was naive.
Yeah, and we grow as individuals.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. And so then about a week later, my friend and I were like, okay, we're going to go into business together. And I think we tried for a couple of weeks and we're like, we can't work together. And so that kind of unraveled. And I thought, I really want to see if there is some meat behind this.
So you were still determined to get it going.
Yeah, and one of the great things about epic failure is that you can't go further down.
You're at the very bottom,
aren't you? I was at the bottom, and I was so embarrassed. I was mortified.
So that embarrassment coming through, that stigma of I must be a failure, Nick, to a certain point, but maybe not at that age.
Well, I don't know if I don't think I felt like a failure. I just felt like a fool. you know, like I didn't think that I was never going to be successful again. It was, well, that didn't work out. And now I don't know what I'm quite going to do, because how do you say that you've been fired from a job and try and get another one? Like, I just couldn't quite piece it together.
It's extremely hard.
That's right. And so that was about a week later that I thought, you know, I'm going to try and work through the calculus of how to structure this formula, because there's got to be a formula behind it. And I studied calculus at university for a year, kind of enough to realize that there was an algorithm, but I didn't quite know how to get it. And that was when I called the calculus department.
Walk in, sit down, talk through it.
And it was after being fired, after working with my friend, who was kind of your comfort. It's always helpful if you get fired together,
comfort,
right?
Comfort blanket. You can, you can console on each other.
And then
a coffee,
we're
or
like,
wine.
You know, this is going to destroy our friendship if we keep working like this.
Okay.
And so she continued in the mortgage space, and I'm like, okay, in for a penny, in for a pound.
So all in.
All in, yeah.
No family at that stage, or family coming on the way? Or?
Well, I was married, and about 6 weeks later, I found out I was pregnant.
Brilliant. So you've got everything resolved, resilience, tick, tick, tick. And that stood you through to today, I take it? That ability to go, I'm doing it.
Unwavering, yes.
Ah, okay.
So it's, you adapt. You know where you want to be. There was no decision at any point, or it never crossed my mind to quit.
It was, it's never going to fail. It's gonna, this is
I
gonna
was
work.
On a journey. Brilliant. And it was really hard, and it was uncomfortable, and it meant that, well, unfortunately, I'm not a very gracious pregnant person. And I have a tendency to be sick my whole pregnancy.
Oh, no.
And so it was just horrible, that part. But nothing forces you to focus than a team of people who are relying on you, because they have chosen to back you. You know, I'm very conscious of my staff, and many of whom have hitched their wagon to my star.
Yeah, from the start.
And they believe in what we're trying to do. Mm. And that creates a pressure and a responsibility, but it also is a push. I guess it's how you want to view it. So I kind of had that, and I found out I was pregnant, and that was kind of cool. And then we never quite got over the morning sickness. And then for the first year of work, I brought my son to work with me every day.
So you wasn't at home, sitting on the couch, working. You was in an office doing what you was setting up yourself? Or did you have the pressures of having an office
rent,
running?
OPEX,
yeah, everything.
Yep, in for a penny. I'm not the type of person that can work from home. You know, I'm I'm the type of person that I would choose to clean the fridge out rather than sit down
and
do work.
Or be something else to do, the washing or the gardening or something.
It's weird. Yeah. I become suddenly very focused on being domesticated instead of working. So
I've got a 20-foot shipping container that my wife and I converted to have our office on the front of our section at home. And we looked at rents and stuff like that from a coaching point of view. So I get these execs rocking up and CEOs and chair people sitting down in this office of mine, 20-foot shipping container, and they're loving it. They just feel really, it feels right for them. They can feel really vulnerable, but really good at just putting stuff out there. So everyone's got a different view on it. So long-term plan for the business, without jumping too far ahead, but what, when you set up, did you know, right, there's my 5-year plan, there's my 10-year plan, there's my 30-year plan, or was it, okay,
I had a
tomorrow.
5-year plan. Plan. Yep. I respected Stalin's 5-year plan, so I try and bring one in for myself.
Copy and paste.
It's just, you have no reference, right? Like, you're plucking what you think you can do and how you can do it, and you're committed to trying your best. And I think my dad used to say to me, when you get to the end of your rope, tie a knot and hang on. And that's probably something that I have carried, because there were many times where I felt that I was getting close to the end of my rope, and you just keep moving forward.
It's funny, Dad, I don't know, he'll listen to this, because he's probably that 17,000 hitter who just keeps pushing my numbers up. He said, you know, you're only here once. It's not a rehearsal, just do it, but do it well. And if you fall over, pick yourself up and get on again and do it. So everyone gets their advice from certain people, don't they?
Mm.
Why is it, do you feel, and or is it, am I foolish? Do you feel that it's hard for people to sit and talk openly about money itself? Is it kind of the thing that's the hidden elephant in the room?
Well, we know that it's the leading cause of relationship breakdown.
Yep.
We know that it's the leading cause of insomnia in females. We know it causes stress, it causes lost productivity.
Oh, wow.
Many people think you just need to earn more money and that will answer your problems, but really, it's almost the opposite. And we also know that financial success is 80% behaviour and 20% strategy. And perhaps we're aware that a couple of generations ago, you didn't even really need to be that good with money. You kind of just needed to buy a house, and the house would only be 2 times your annual income. So you could do it quite easily, and you'd be okay, whereas that's not the case now. So I think that money is an undercurrent, and I think that most people haven't mastered their money, and unlike generations before, if you want a shot at being successful in this generation or our kids' generation, you must master it, otherwise you're going to slowly erode it.
A lot of people sit with me and they're earning, and we won't put figures out there, but to me it's good money. When you're having multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars you're being paid plus whatever, that's good money. And they're still sitting there, as you call it, with a rope around the neck, the bank manager. And I'm sitting there saying, you're smart, you're clever, you're intelligent, you're running a multi-billion-dollar business. Why are you so crap with your own money? Or how do you allow that? And 9 times out of 10, they say, look, I've got so much pressure from a work point of view. Mm. I just let the home life slip to their personal detriment or family detriment or whatever it may look like.
Yeah, I think that the studies suggest we've got limited willpower. And if you are in a very busy taxing job or a taxing home life, you use so much of your energy just surviving. And when you get to the end of the day, the things that tend to bear the brunt of that is that you just don't have enough time for your finances, probably your family, and probably your own health and well-being. So you might want to elevate those things, but there actually just isn't the ability to do it naturally.
Yeah. So you've helped many families over the years since you've started, and that's huge. You know, any business to succeed in this day and age with all this technology and noise that goes on around us, and we'll come on to that, is a real huge effort and puts a lot of effort into it. But are you seeing so many years, and are there common themes as to why people may choose to come and sit with you? Is there a kind of, Nick, there's a silver bullet in this demographic, this area, this kind of focus, or is it so random? Is it so different that you're seeing?
Well, our clients range pretty dramatically. Their income levels range from $50,000 a year to more than $5 million.
Yep.
Their asset positions range from negative $100,000 to a couple of $100 million.
Mm.
The one consistent theme, though, is that they all want to be able to do better than what they are naturally on track to do. It's just that is a relative term, right?
Should they carry on the way they're
That's
playing?
Right.
Yeah.
So if you think of us as a coach or a trainer, some of our clients are financially sluggish or overweight, and we need to just get them back on the basics and trying to get them lean and resilient as quickly as possible. Some are already financial athletes, and they want a strategy to grow their wealth. They want to be held accountable, and they want to be able to retire in 10 years, not in 25 years, and they want to leave a legacy for their kids. So it depends on kind of what your goal is, but as a minimum, people don't want money to be a thing. They want to
not
be in control
driver.
Of it.
Not the personal driver for their behaviour? Or
I think they've got different whys.
Yeah.
You know, like some people come to see us because they want to be a better example to their kids. Some people don't want to have to earn the level of income they have to earn to keep the mortgage, to keep it all going. Like that's another stress for them.
Yeah.
Or some people are motivated by the fact that they don't have a retirement sorted and that they've got to do something about that because in not addressing it, anxiety levels are increasing. Or then you've got the dynamic of a shopper being married to a saver and how kind of interesting that can be. Or someone who's safety conscious being married to an adventurer, a financial adventurer. How does that work? And a lot of these things you can cope with when you're newly married or together.
Yep.
But after 10 years or once you've got kids, they can put pressure on you, those different tendencies between you and your spouse.
I love when your business started to go and grow and watching it from afar and also going through the program, as I said, with building your team, Suzanne. The words like frittering away or going backwards, those things really resonated with me as a human. And I know a lot of my clients from a coaching side, they sit there and they say, you know, they're coming for a certain topic, but I'd say 9 times out of 10 it's that money behavior at the very top. And I think the book, your first book, I think it's been loaned out more times than any book in my library, so hopefully people are coming on through. But you know, you get to see people improve in your world. When you see families come in, or when you see husband and wife come in, one of them is really reluctant to, or very skeptical about going to see a financial advisor. Don't talk about money or anything like that. Don't tell them what's the thing. And the other person's really like, no, we really want to get ahead. How do you kind of entice, or not entice, but how do you work with people that maybe one side of the fence isn't as optimistic about, let's get this done? Because I know full well as a coach, if the person doesn't want to be in the room with me, doesn't matter how much they're paying me, I'm wasting their time and my time. See you later. But so how do you, as a financial coach, help her?
Well, a lot of clients, prospective clients, say, how do I drag my partner along? And my reply is,
wine.
A good threat goes a long way. You know, like if something is important to you, well, it doesn't have to be a threat. Yeah, but if it's important to you, even if they don't buy into it, they should at least respect that this is bothering you, or you've identified that you could be doing things better. And I think the thing with finances is, historically, we've tended to outsource the responsibility of managing the finances to one person in the relationship. And the problem with that is that person might not even be in control of the finances. Mm. And you're just saying, well, they're in control. And
she'll be right.
And she'll be right. Yeah. And I don't think that you both need to sit down and pay the bills together. I think that's a waste of time. But at the very least, you need to know if you're on track to achieve your financial goals. And if you're not, what you're going to do about it. And if you don't have a financial goal, you probably start with, well, what are we going to need for retirement? How long do we have to get it? And what are we going to do about it? Or if you don't want to think about that, what are you going to do for your kids? Because it's going to be harder for them. Mm. What can we do to incentivize you to set a better example for your kids? Because you can tell your kids to spend less than they earn, but if you're not doing that, they're very aware of hypocrisy.
Lead by example.
Yeah, well, they just catch the wrong lessons, right? Yeah. And that's what you're trying to avoid.
I think our son Louis, he's just turned two, he's really into it already. So he's got a little, his little ASB piggy bank, and we put some coins in there, and he loves seeing that. We put money away every week, and that's, anyway, it's not about me, it's about the audience. So I wouldn't mind talking about some specifics. And when we've got a wide audience of different ages, different levels in their career, etc., let's just run on a few things. So an individual just coming out of university, getting into their first job, congratulations, well done on securing a job. It's really hard out there, we know. What financial pointers might you want to share with them? Their first paycheck's coming in. Suddenly they've got this money. What kind of advice or what kind of things can you steer to them?
Well, I think one of the first things you've got to determine is, of the money coming in, how much of it is allocated?
Right.
And you need a plan. And a lot of kids don't even know how to write a budget nowadays, possibly because they've got no references to what things cost.
From a schooling point of view?
From a schooling, education, university perspective. Yep. That's not taught, and the parents aren't teaching it. Mm. So they get this money coming in. If they're living at home, then it's probably all discretionary. They can spend it on whatever they want because they don't have to pay their board. But if they are renting or flatting or in a hostel, then there are some pretty big costs they need to be across. It surprises me how many kids are going into university or graduating at the other end, and there is just no connection to, there's income coming in, what do we now do with it?
So it's just coming in.
Yeah, they don't connect the rest, because a lot of them are more familiar with debt, right? So they've got the overdraft, the credit cards. So there is no awareness of when the money runs out, because there's always this stream of money that they can tap into. And so very early on, they're almost set off on the wrong foot. And then the other problem is that traditionally, you just really needed to get a good job and kind of progress through the ranks, and you would be okay. Whereas for many of us, the kids coming through, my kids, getting a good job is not going to allow them to live the lifestyle to which they're accustomed living with me. Mm. Not because I live a very big lifestyle, but the size of the mortgages, if they're going to buy their own home, the ratios are going to be absurd. So the traditional income levels aren't going to be enough. So for them, they need to get their head around probably not owning their home, maybe owning investment properties. Mm. They're probably going to have a job, but they need career progression. So they've got to work out their career capital and how they can grow that. Yep. And they need to understand leverage, and they probably need to get a side hustle going on. And so there's a whole lot of stuff that they need to bring together. And if they don't know where they're aiming for, they're just going to be inefficient, which really just means it's going to take them longer than what it needs to.
They'll get there, but what I'm hearing in that, and this is not my way of saying it, but just get that plan. Understand a little bit more about the plan of where you want to get to financially as a younger person going into your first job. And don't just assume, and we'll come on to it with technology, but don't assume that money's always going to come in on the 20th of the month, because it potentially may not.
Well, I guess it depends on the type of job.
Profession that they're in. So flicking that on, you've got an individual climbing the career. Every year they might be getting a bonus, a pay increase, etc. We all see it. We've all experienced it. Well deserved. But are there any thoughts from your side about that additional money? Do we just rush out and buy the latest pair of shoes and the next car? What's your kind of advice for somebody who's maybe taking some bonuses or growing in their career?
Well, we need to have something that we're aiming for. So if we're working with some of these young adults, our goal might be within 2 years out of university, we want them to own a property.
Right.
Like something that's exciting for them, and it has to be compelling, because otherwise they can become disillusioned fairly quickly. And that's when, well, I don't know if they spiral out of control, but they just take longer again to get to where they need to be.
Yeah. And a guy or girl just changed their jobs and they've been given a 10, 15, 20 grand pay increase. Again, similar feedback from your side, or?
Yeah, I think not necessarily kind of young kids, but anyone who gets a giant pay rise, you want to have something to show for it. And what we know is that unless we've got a plan we're working to, that money will get frittered, which means you just won't even see it. And so often we only recall the things that were our curveballs, you know, kind of things that upset our plans instead of the opportunities that were presented to us. And they're equal. It's just we never have an accounting for the opportunities and we're scarred by the curveballs. And people have more opportunity than what they realise to get ahead. If you're getting a bonus, then you should be jumping ahead. But if you're sinking financially, it's never going to happen. We've got to fix that first.
And that's one thing that the business, when we saw you and other friends have experienced your business, you know, you were still allowed to have a lifestyle. You were still able to do things. You weren't just sat there eating 2 minute noodles. We weren't. Others haven't done that. So
no, I think that for a plan to be a plan, it needs to be sustainable. Yep. And to be sustainable, you've got to work out what are the things that make me happy. And too often with budgets, people think we just need to go without. Whereas the success of a budget is identifying the things you need to be happy, so it feels like you're living the life you want to live, and the sensitivity around the level you need to spend on that cost. Because it's not about going without, but it is about understanding at what point do you get a diminishing return of happiness for the extra dollar spent. Hmm. And that is the point where fritter kicks in.
Hmm. And then right at the very end of that, you've got baby boomers, those that are retiring. And I read something recently, and I think you've spoken about it, around mum and dad or grandparents are helping the kids of today out. Hmm. They're helping them get onto the property ladder. You know, they may have worked their asses off their whole lives, and they've done well, they paid off their mortgage, they're waiting for their retirement. What kind of things should be or could be going through their heads now as a baby boomer, older generation?
That have lent money to their kids?
Yeah, or maybe are feeling that they want to help their kids. I want to do everything for my children. I'm sure most parents do, but there's a way of helping without giving. There's a way of showing without saying, oh, there you go, little Johnny is 100,000, or there's 50,000, or there's 10,000.
Yeah.
Having that relationship with money isn't about just being given it all the time.
No, it's not. But when your family is struggling, like say if they're a young family, if you're a grandparent, and they're not living in nice accommodation, they might have young children, and you are in a position to do something about it, you want to. The most common way that parents do that is by using the equity in their own property as a deposit for the son or daughter to purchase a property, or to use it where they both might go in. If you're a baby boomer or if you're retiring, you might not have income, but you do have capital, whereas your children might not have capital, but they've got income, and you might be able to blend the two so you both get something from it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be your parents giving you money. Mm. There are many ways that your parents can support you. It might be looking after the kids. Mm. That can be really helpful so that you can
work.
More. You can work more. It could be allowing you to move in with your young family for a time so that you can reduce your fixed costs so you can save more. There are just many ways that a parent can support the child without it being here's a check. But I think that the best way a parent can support their child is to have their child ready to be successful. And too often we are preparing our kids, well, I don't know what we're preparing them for, but it is not the future to which they are living. I think...
Is it too much of the now, living the now rather than, you know...
Well, I think that the challenge is that you've got two types of parents. You've got those who can't afford to give opportunity to their kids, and so it's a financial decision to say no, which is a whole lot easier to say no to than an emotional decision. Many parents are in a position to be generous with their kids, and to say no to that almost feels selfish as the parent, even though sometimes saying no might be the one thing the child needs from a financial perspective to catch the right lesson.
Technology, And look, thanks for those kind of, I try to, when I was doing some research on this topic and having a conversation with you, it's so hard to kind of pinpoint certain areas. I wanted to try and be a little bit broader than specific, but technology is not broad, it's very specific. And everyone I've had on my podcast since September, we've always spoken a little bit about technology. How is it going to support my business? How is it going to hurt my business? How might it enable my business once for the world? It's Dr. Google. There's so many things out there that are trying to help people from technology. But are you seeing technology supporting? I think when I came in, I don't know if there was an app you were working on. There was something you was working on, but long story short. But what did? Are you getting the best use of technology as a business owner, as a group? Or are you putting it
on? Well, as a group, we definitely
are.
As of today, we have 3 developers on staff.
Oh, in-house?
Within our group,
brilliant.
Yes, in-house.
Oh, wow.
So technology is at the forefront of our wider group and what we're doing. We're definitely going into kids' education and business coaching and some of those things. The technology is really helpful. For Enable Me, though, technology in most instances, we can make the journey exciting and fun and challenging. But the most common point of technology that people use with finances is to look at where they've spent their money.
That pie chart.
The pie chart.
The chunk of widgets that you've
seen. Yeah,
you
or the bank statement that's kind of been
perfect.
represented or illustrated differently. But the problem with that is that you've already spent the money.
You're being an auditor, you're looking backwards.
We actually need frameworks to work within that has nothing to do with the technology. It's actually to do with the system that you need to work within. And we can try and engage you to that, but we can make a bank statement look as pretty as it needs to be, but it's still, you've already spent the money at that point.
So fundamentally what I'm hearing then is that human contact content from you and your team is still extremely important. Not there's technology that's going to take over and that widget will show you the way.
Well, accountability is key, right?
Yes.
So that's when you're looking at what you've done, where are the holes, what are we going to do differently, how can we stretch you? That you have to be really creative with that, because people's budgets aren't like they are when you're a 10-year-old where you might have 1 or 2 lines of expenditure. They are complicated as you get older and they're emotional. So you have curveballs. We need to be able to, I guess, offset those, take advantage of different opportunities. That is business or creative design at its best. So where, I guess, technology could come in is, do you need that accountability to be face-to-face or do you need it in an app? And some people can cope with an app.
Yeah. Many of the younger generation, are just driving through the apps. They don't want to sit down and...
They don't, but their situations are a lot simpler.
Yeah.
And when you introduce the dynamic of a relationship and you get to some of the different psychologies between you and your partner, you can't always put it into a formula.
You
actually need to understand what are the things that you haven't even identified for yourself that I need to identify as the reason why you're not getting ahead. So some people can work well to apps. I think that as their situation becomes more complicated, I think the apps are limited.
That's nice to hear.
For me personally, I could download an exercise app. I won't turn it on, right? Whereas if I have a personal trainer at the gym, that's the difference between me doing it or not, even though you could say they're both forms of accountability.
I remember training for my first Ironman and my coach was plugged into my Garmin, so she was sitting in her house and I was doing my training. She'd phone up and say, "Oh, not a great bike ride today," or "Not a great swim today, Nick. What happened?" And it really held me to account because my coach was sitting there looking at the technology, seeing what I was or wasn't doing. So yeah, it can hold you to account. We're probably going to wrap up, but 2018 for you, you said earlier before we even started that the business is growing really well and offices up and down the country. Just give me a bit of, or give our listeners a bit of a sense of where you're at here in New Zealand, or
So we've got 10 offices around New Zealand and we're about to open our 11th office.
Brilliant.
That's really exciting.
Congratulations.
But 2018 is a really big year for us. It's probably the biggest year that we're ever looking at.
I know you've been doing tours everywhere, doing talks and...
Oh, yes. So I've done a nationwide seminar series, but perhaps for me, most importantly, I've just recruited a CEO.
Brilliant.
So that there's someone who's, I guess, across the running of the business, so we can take this business where it needs to be.
Yeah.
We think that there is a huge issue around people coming up to retirement, and we think there's a huge issue around kids preparing for what life is like after school and what it's like after university. And we're putting a lot of energy into developing some resources, which we hope are going to create some permanent and positive change for some generations.
So 11 places up and down the country. Couple of books.
Mm-hmm.
You tired? Are you fizzing? Are you really up?
I know, I'm tired. My daughter woke me up last night.
Kids, just get rid of them. Boarding school early.
Yeah.
Not in the budget.
No. What do you do? You do it for yourself because you feel that you have got something that you have to... You just feel it's inside of you. I don't know if I'd say it's eating you, but it's...
Oh, is it grappling at you that you, if you don't do it, what might? Or what if? Because that's hard to summarise.
I just feel, you know that in that movie Slumdog Millionaire?
Yes.
How kind of all these random things happen and then it came together at the end and you could see the reason behind it. I feel that everything that has happened in my career has brought me to this particular point.
2018.
And we are about to take off. And... that is one of the most exciting things. And I think the other thing is that we're at a point where we're attracting awesome talent.
Yeah.
So you're working with people who you have a lot of respect for that are going to help you be better than what you could have been yourself. And that's great. It's great that you are an example to your kids. I want my kids to thrive. It helps that I'm thriving in my own career. I want them to reach for the stars. It helps that I can show them how to do that. You know, I get frustrated at some of the little half-truths we tell our kids. And, for example, I tell my daughter it's going to be harder for her to get ahead than my son.
Yep.
Not because I'm a negative parent. I'm an honest parent. And I'm going to equip her with what she needs to do to bridge some of those challenges that a lot of generations females and generations have faced.
Oh, look, it sounds really, really exciting. And the growth and going back to day one to today and just seeing it from an outside point of view, not inside the business. I know a recent article you were talking about, you know, wanting to be number 11th, the best top 100th company in New Zealand. We need better companies. We need more companies.
Yes.
You're there. You're getting there. You're going to be that.
I am.
Brilliant.
Well, we are.
We
There's
as a
team.
Group. Yeah, it's hard, isn't it, sometimes? It is hard sometimes. Well, look, what I might do is... I'll ensure that our show notes and links to your website, enableme.co.nz, and links to your books and things that you're doing here, if that's okay, I'll put them out to our show notes, on my show notes. Because I just think if we can help people improve, if people can connect, people can kind of feel free to ask or come and have a chat. That's the whole point of why I'm doing these podcasts. So I think we got there. I know we could probably go on for hours. I know your phone's been buzzing in the background. Maybe there's a follow-up podcast. Who knows? Next kind of 12 months, 24 months goes. But I do wish you all the best and your team all the best for 2018. And I really hope it goes well. On a personal favour for the listeners, if you like what you're hearing, please feel free. Kind enough to share this around your friends, family, work colleagues. Everybody's welcome in this little house. I really appreciate you helping me grow this community. Finally, Hannah, good talking to you today. Thank you so much for being my guest, for being so open on a topic that I know is so, so important. I hope you enjoyed your time with me as well.
Thank you.
I wish you and the family all the best for 2018. Thanks, everyone, for listening in today. Wherever you are in the world, take care, look after yourself and those you care about. See you all soon on the Nick Rowe podcast.